If all the billionaires in the world, all the executives of all the oil companies were to come together and say, you know what, we need a sustainable future, I agree with you, then we wouldn't need to struggle. The reason we need to struggle is that the interests of the capitalist class and the billionaire class are diametrically opposed to the interests of everybody else who wants a sane society. And so if we have to be contentious, then it's our moral and political duty to be contentious. And if they think it's mean-spirited, well, so be it.
That was Kashama Sawant on What It Takes to Win. She spoke at the University of Washington in Seattle. Kashama Sawant, a socialist, is a member of the Seattle City Council. This program is produced by Alternative Radio based in Boulder, Colorado. We are independent and part of the nonprofit media education organization, Rise Up. We are supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature progressive voices rarely heard in the media, such as Vandana Shiva, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, Angela Davis, Arundhati Roy, Chris Hedges, Noam Chomsky, and Tariq Ali. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for CDs, MP3s, or written transcripts of today's program, Kashama Sawant on What It Takes to Win, call us at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that number is 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order on our website, alternativeradio.org. Special thanks to Julia Robinson of Health Alliance International in Seattle. Ed Mays recorded the program. The Kronos Quartet performs our theme music from Pieces of Africa. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
The time is 10 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Tave Fache-Drake, and I'm going to be with you here until noon. Coming up next, we have Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia. You'll hear about weather headlines. There'll be some interview and commentary. At 10:15, we have Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. He's going to welcome back Greg Palast and his post-election crimes bulletin. At 11, on stage and studio, Dimae Roberts talks to organizers of two upcoming festivals, Damaris Webb and Loara Loforti of Vanport Mosaic, which highlights the history of Vanport and beyond. And then, Rusty Newton Tennant of Outright Festival presents Sordid Lives, a satiric play about gay conversation therapy. And at 11:30, we round out the morning with Art Focus. Art Focus speaks to photographer Susan Subert, whose new show about suicide is called Not a Day Goes By. And then, as usual, we have our fantastic 5 o'clock KBOO Evening News produced for you by volunteers each day, fresh every day. There will be an in-depth interview with photojournalist Zach Kramer, who spent the winter with disarmed FARC guerrilla fighters during the peace transition of Colombia's 50-year-long civil war. Thanks, KBOO members. We always are delighted to have you listening. And if you'd like to listen to anything that you hear today later, please go to kboo.fm/listen. You can look up the name of the program and or the time and re-listen to it again. All right, up next, after these messages, you will hear Chris Andre. Thanks.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host Chris Hedges Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Hedges takes a provocative look at the current state of revolt in the United States and will recount the U.S.'s continuing history of domestic terrorism while outlining ways for communities to resist before it's too late. Again, that's Chris Hedges Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, May 9th, 2017, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, your sanctuary radio, your resistance radio, because you are the reason that we are here. Yeah, that's right. We always start thinking about that as the membership drive begins to hove into view over the horizon. It is your radio. It really, and it has been for nearly 50 years, 24 hours a day, 365 days a week on the air, purely and solely powered by you, the KBOO member. Think about it. It really is a radio station. Ownership in America is about the only thing left that's sacred, eh? Isn't it? So it can be a very positive force for good, or ownership can be a terrible, viciously self-destructive force. And Now, in this media environment, it's up to owners of media outlets whether their possession is going to be a force of good or a force of extraordinary evil. If you take a look at the way this presidency has made itself into, a flurry of tweets is it. That's the way that the president communicates with the American people. Really, only less than half the American people, too, for that matter. We're going to be talking coal today. We may also get a quick word with James Henry about the Russian connection. There's so much you can do with it. From Russia with Love, Donald Trump. Is what we expect here, only it would have to be tweeted, I expect. That said, when we think about the Trump administration and the corner it's got itself boxed into, it really has only one more ace in this hand, and that is coal. Coal has been highly politicized. It is what Donald Trump always flashes at the American people to get their interest. It is tied up with the concept of jobs. We don't really have jobs anymore. You can kiss that off. We have the illusion of jobs, but there really aren't any jobs. Coal and mountaintop mining is one of the worst possible ways that you can kill off an economy, you can kill off a people, you can kill off a tradition. And that we're going to be speaking in just a moment with Vernon Halton and get a proper introduction going, but since time is always running short on the show, I want to just bring Vernon on and talk about what's going on in coal country, because does it affect all of us? You bet it affects all of us. Mountaintop mining, of course, directly affects people exposed to the results of mountaintop mining. Also, of course, there's a whole tradition, there's the life in the hollers, and this is what we think of in many cases when we think of what America really is. And now, bringing this up into the harsh glare of the present, Donald Trump campaigned on coal, and he really does owe it to the voters who supported him to be honest about what we're really talking about. So on that note, good morning, Vernon. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back. You've been on the show before, I believe, a while ago.
Thank you for having me.
So what's going on? The Surface Mining Board hearing. There's a motion to dismiss the Coal River Mountain Watch's appeal of the Long Ridge Number 1 mountaintop removal permit. That may require translation for people who aren't keeping up with this. Coal, though, is what we need to be looking at all the time, keeping a sharpish eye out, because this is something, again, that the Trump administration really... they need coal more than coal needs them at this point. So the Coal River Mountain Watch, you're representing, of course, appealed the Long Ridge Number 1 permit. Can you talk a little bit about that? What that permit would have allowed, and why the Coal River Mountain Watch went to bat to stop this from happening?
Okay. This is an 853-acre mountaintop removal permit. That's over one square mile, to put it in a more digestible term. This particular permit is one of many on Coal River Mountain, and by many I mean, I guess, a handful, but altogether on Coal River Mountain, you have over 6,500 acres of either permitted or active or pending mountaintop removal or other surface destruction, such as the 7 billion gallon Brushy Fork sludge dam. So over 6,500 acres, that's over 10 square miles of destruction. This is 853 acres of that. So what mountaintop removal is, for folks who don't know, coal companies clear cut the trees, they blow up the mountain, they often push the rubble into neighboring valleys, causing what's called valley fills. Now they don't have to do that so much because there's so much mountaintop removal already. They just push it onto another site or an existing valley fill. But part of the process involving the blasting, you have a lot of dust, a lot of carcinogenic dust. The World Health Organization lists particulate pollution as a group 1 carcinogen. So you have these clouds of dust drifting down into the hollows where people live, and drifting for miles in some cases, and causing significant health impacts. We have significant health impacts, 42% higher birth defect rate. That's more than double the 18% added risk of maternal smoking, for example. Our cancer rates are 50% higher. In the Coal River Valley, they're double the national average. We have higher rates of lung disease and other deadly illnesses that we can link pretty well to this type of mountain, this type of mining. And what happened today, you know, we lost our hearing today.
Really?
Yes.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Well, what happened was the State Surface Mine Board chose not to even hear our appeal. And the basis for not hearing our appeal is that we filed our appeal within the time frame that the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection gave us, but that date was apparently did not comply with the strict legal definition of when we could file. So
wait, what? That doesn't make any sense to me. Could you explain that again?
It doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense either. But it's what we've come to expect. So our takeaway is: don't listen to the West Virginia DEP, even when you ask them a straight up question and they give you a straight up answer. Take it with a grain of salt.
But wouldn't that void the decision? Wouldn't if you are complying with the dates that were prescribed by law, and then say that no, according to our laws, you've failed to, you know, file the appeal
right,
in accordance with the dates that we want. How is that? What would have worked? If this didn't work, what would have worked?
Well, what would have worked would be if we had not listened to them or not asked a question and just filed based on when we expected that we could file. Basically, what happened was their permit supervisor interpreted the law in a different way than the Service Mine Board did.
That in itself would demand that another appeal be filed because of this date.
This is West Virginia, and I think it's important to note that this permit was applied for in 2015. We had 73,000 petition signatures against it. We had from all over the world. We had local people turn out opposed to it, and so forth. But in West Virginia, the coal company gets what the coal company wants. The West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection's attorney basically seized any argument